Hi, and welcome to another episode of Sandal Road, the show where I talk to successful startup founders and investors about the companies that they build and invest in. And the goal, like always, is to give you a sense of what it's like to be in their shoes, how their businesses tick, and to learn from their successes and mistakes. And today, I'm super excited to be joined by Patrick Chase, who's an investor at Redpoint.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And together, we're going to take a deep dive into the commercial open source segment, where Redpoint is a very active investor.
So we like to invest in companies where the market is so big that it wouldn't matter if a cloud vendor entered the market.
Having invested in the likes of HashiCorp, Mattermost, MapR, Cockroach Labs, and most recently, Dgraph. But let's hear it from Patrick himself, and let's jump right in. I'm really honored to be joined by Patrick Chase here from Redpoint today. He is an engineer turned investor. He started his career at LinkedIn, and after a MBA at Stanford, he started a Redpoint. I think it was 1 or 2 years ago, and it's probably been quite the ride for you to transition from the engineering role into the investor role. So maybe I give the floor to you, Patrick. Maybe walk us a little bit through your journey to the wonderful world of venture.
For sure. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. As you mentioned, my professional career started in the machine learning world at LinkedIn. And I joined the team there. This was in 2013, right when machine learning was starting to become really popular. And once I had learned about it, that you could get a computer to do a task without explicitly programming, I just wanted to go as deep as I could in that world and really get close to hardcore machine learning. So that brought me to LinkedIn. While I was there, I worked on feed and search. So if you've seen the trending news in your feed, that was one of the things that we built. And it was a really fun project. Touched a lot of open source technologies, both in the offline big data world and the online world. So we used Hadoop, Kafka, Spark, and then also LinkedIn had a proprietary system, but something similar to Elastic. So I was a big user of open source technologies back then. Now have moved over to the investing side and investing in open source technologies. And the transition there was, had been an engineer for a couple of years, loved the work, felt really fortunate that I could work with the data team at LinkedIn, but decided that I wanted to do something closer to the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And so I was thinking about either starting my own company, working at an early stage company, or working in venture capital. That was my motivation for going back to business school. And when I was in business school, began working with the Redpoint team, loved everyone here, loved the work, and so came back full time. And now I focus on SaaS and infrastructure for Redpoint. And within that, spend most of my time looking at open source and new opportunities there.
Wonderful. So I personally first came across Redpoint reading the famous blog post of Tomasz Tungas. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. It's one of the hardest names to pronounce correctly.
Yeah,
I think it's Czech, he told once to Jason Calacanis. So, and he's really this SaaS metrics guru for me in many ways. And so I always have this impression of Redpoint being this venture fund that is very clear and open about the kind of metrics that entrepreneurs have to hit before they pitch them. But maybe from your first years at Redpoint, give us a little bit of your personal experience at Redpoint so far, and maybe also a bit of a high-level introduction to Redpoint itself.
For sure. So Redpoint's been around for 20 years. We've invested across consumer and enterprise, and we invest out of two funds right now, an early stage fund and a growth fund. And between those, we invest all the way from seed to Series D, so kind of the full life cycle of companies. And I spend all my time on the early stage side, so seed, Series A, and Series B. Some of the things that I think make us unique, as you were mentioning, I think we like to be super transparent with founders. I think that's kind of you were talking about that. And we think about that in a couple different ways. One, putting metrics out to the community. And Tomash has done a really good job of this with his blog, but giving back to the community and giving them the metrics and the data that we have as investors. And so they can think about how they're tracking towards those metrics as building their company. And we like to be really transparent in the investing process and kind of lead them through everything that we're doing in real time and give them a date where we're going to be making our decision by, so that we can really be super clear with everything that's happening. Fundraising is a time of a lot of uncertainty, and we think that by over communicating, you can take out most of that uncertainty. So that's something that we really try to do. I think two other things that make us unique: we have great empathy for we like to think we have great empathy for founders. Everyone on the early stage team has been a founder or an operator, and in many cases, people have founded and exited multiple companies. And we think that gives us great empathy that founders are on, and we like to use that to build a relationship and really be that first call for them if something goes wrong or if there's something to celebrate, but really be super close to them along the journey. I think the last thing is we really emphasize teamwork, red points, and equal partnership. So when a founder decides to partner with us, they don't just get the one partner that they're working with, they get the whole team, and that's by design.
Oh, that's great. Let's maybe segue to a more broader discussion about the whole commercial open source segment. And we've seen the presentation from a16z earlier this week from Peter Levine.
The bulk of investments have occurred over the past 10 years. There isn't just more open source investment. This investment is leading to bigger IPOs.
Where he basically talks about commercial open source. I think it's the first time that I heard someone talk about like a lead funnel in many ways.
As I mentioned, I think of open source as a developer-driven top of funnel exercise.
That you get the community involved and you basically take it from there. You have different models and ways to monetize. And he suggests that you really iterate among the different business models. And I had Sid Sabranji recently on the show, the founder of GitLab. And he really went through like a couple of iterations, you know, starting with a SaaS model, then doing a service model, then building custom features before he really landed on the open core model.
Slowly but surely, we figured out, okay, we really need to charge for features.
So what's your personal thinking about the different models?
For sure. I think there's three main models, which a lot of people have discussed, but I'll kind of define them a little bit just so we're on the same page and then go into more of our thinking around the models. I think the first model is support. This is the Red Hat model, and this is the pay someone a fee so that you can call them at midnight if something breaks. Mm-hmm. Fewer and fewer companies going down this path because it's harder to scale and the gross margins aren't as good. So we see fewer companies going towards the support model. The second model is the open core model, as you were talking about. One example of a company there from our portfolio is HashiCorp, and they've done a really good job. A risk with this model is figuring out what to put into the open source versus what to put into the enterprise edition. Mm-hmm. HashiCorp has a good job of defining this right from the beginning. So the way that they think about drawing the line is anything for the individual goes into the community version, and anything that you would need for an organization goes into the enterprise edition. And I think drawing that line early really gave clarity to the community of what they could expect coming from HashiCorp. And so it's allowed them to go build a very successful business without alienating the community. And so I think a key consideration with the open core model is what do you end up putting into the open core versus what you end up putting into the enterprise. The open core. And then the last model is the SaaS model. And this is where you charge for hosting or you charge for usage storing data. And we think that can be a very successful model as well. In terms of some of the trade-offs there, I think the open core model is interesting because it usually has the lowest cost associated with delivering a service. So we've seen this with companies like Mattermost, and their cost to serve a new additional client, since they're not hosting the infrastructure themselves, is very low, which means that they can grow really quickly in terms of revenue without a big cost on their side associated with that revenue. The flip side of that is on the SaaS. With SaaS, you have a higher cost associated with the revenue, but potentially better lock-in because everyone's storing their data with you. So those are some of the trade-offs. This might be an oversimplification, and it certainly is.
It makes a lot of sense. A lot of areas,
but I think if you are storing or processing data, then a SaaS model makes sense because you can charge for storing and processing that. If you're not, then I think the open core model makes sense.
Okay. So you would say like the sweet spot when you're looking at companies at the moment is probably more in the open core and SaaS side of things, with the services model being maybe like an addition for the onboarding, which I've seen a lot recently for the onboarding sort of services, but then the sweet spot being really the open core model and the SaaS if possible, if there's data stored.
Yeah, we try to encourage people to go towards the open core of the SaaS. But to be honest, a lot of companies do start at with support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we think you engage the community and get people using your software early, because you do need those early adopters to go out and build the SaaS offering. So we see some companies start with support and off of that, along with their enterprise version, and then maybe a SaaS model over time.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about defensibility of business models. And something that we often see is that we have, once there is an open source project, we have different monetization layers layered on top of it. And we've seen it with Hadoop and MapReduce, basically having these three players, Hortonworks, Cloudera, MapR, around this open source project. And in terms of defensibility, this raises a couple of questions. And obviously, then you also have the cloud providers moving in. We've seen this with Redis and Redis Labs and AWS basically moving in, and then the whole discussion surrounding the Commons clause. How do you think about defensibility of open source projects? I think this is a really important question that has come up recently.
For sure. We think it's a really important question, and it's something that we think about with every open source investment that we make, right? How will this company respond if a cloud vendor starts to sell a competitive product is something that we think about for all of our investments. I think the first thing we think about is market size. So we like to invest in companies where the market is so big that it wouldn't matter if a cloud vendor entered the market. So one company that comes to mind is Snowflake, right? They more than tripled their revenue over from the past year, and they compete directly with Redshift, BigQuery offerings from all these cloud vendors. And one of the reasons why they've been able to be so successful is the cloud data warehouse market is so enormous that you can still build a huge company even with the cloud vendors going after it. So Snowflake's not open source, but they do compete directly with the cloud vendors, and we like to find companies that kind of have that similar aspect to that. I think another example, it's a 5-point company, and there was an article published recently that Amazon makes more money selling Elastic, or more money of the same amount of money selling Elastic as Elastic does. And so that market is so big that it can support multiple players. So I think that's the first thing we think about. The second thing is getting the core contributors from the open source project on board, because you want that expertise. You want to be the person that startups think of first when going to buy the product. A company that comes to mind is CockroachDB from our portfolio. They are the team that built Spanner. The core contributors are the founders of CockroachDB. So if you're going to go buy Cockroach or buy a distributed SQL database, then you want to go to Cockroach. You don't want to go to AWS. And I think the last point in terms of defensibility is using focus as a startup to build a better experience than the cloud vendors. Focus is really the only advantage that you have as a startup, competing against the Amazon and Googles of the world. I think there's people that emphasize multi-cloud, you no vendor lock-in if you're not going with the AWS offering. I think those are important, but when it comes down to it, people will pick the better experience. And I think as a startup, you need to go build that.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about this famous Mark Andreessen quote of software is eating the world. I had Joseph Jacks on the show, who's investing solely in COSS. And he says that basically in the future, open source software will be eating software. And what he means by this is basically that you will have open source software moving from basically the back end all the way to CMS, CRM, and to ultimately consumer. And in your portfolio, you have Mattermost, which is the open source Slack, if you like. You mentioned that at LinkedIn, you worked with Kafka, which spun out of LinkedIn and became Confluent. I think LinkedIn is still actively really contributing. I think they have 30 engineers working and contributing to Kafka. And this is more like the back end of this consumer application, but we could ultimately see open source moving really directly to consumer software side. Maybe that's still a little bit far out in the future, but I'll just put it to you. What do you think about this? Is this totally dystopian, or could we see this in our lifetimes?
Yeah, I think the consumer software might be a little out there. We'll see. But we are really excited about open source applications, open source at the application layer. And you talked about our investment in Mattermost. That investment has led us to take a more holistic view across a lot of the enterprise verticals and try to figure out, okay, where would an open source alternative make sense? And I think that's something that we're really excited about. And I think the three things that we look for when looking at a vertical and deciding if it would make sense for an open source application, I like looking at, okay, should there be an open source Dropbox or should there be an open source Salesforce, right? The three questions that we ask ourselves are, first, is there a desire for self-hosting? Is there a benefit for self-hosting? The benefits of open source really are only there if you're self-hosting. You get data control, flexibility, the ability to add a lot of your own integrations. And these are things that we've seen with Mattermost. And so if there isn't that desire to self-host, then it's probably not a great market for open source application. I think the second thing is we look for verticals where the software is adopted by the IT department. And the reason for this is you want a technical buyer, because then they can go out, deploy the software themselves, and they're going to be the care about integrations, data privacy, all of these things. So you really want IT to be your champion internally. And then I think the third thing that we look at is we look for companies that are really targeting the enterprise, that are targeting large companies. The reason for this is early stage companies, startups, typically are more than happy to go with the SaaS offering, right? They're the Figma, Slacks, all of those tools. But once you reach a certain scale and start caring about data privacy and integrations and more customizability, then you might be more interested in an open source alternative and some of the benefits that go along with that and the economies of scale of hosting it yourself. And so we really look for kind of the enterprise target market. So we've been looking across a bunch of different verticals, trying to see which ones have those three aspects and might make sense for an open source alternative.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Maybe let's talk a little bit about your most recent open source investment, which is a company called dgraph, which is an open source graph database, which is obviously competing with the likes of Neo4j, which is a well-funded late-stage player in the commercial open source space. But maybe let's take a step back. Let's talk a little bit about why do we need a graph database instead of a normal database. I mean, the database segment has been quite active with the Timescale DB in the panel data space. But why do we need a graph database that is storing data about nodes and edges and connectivity? And I think you've in your article, you mentioned that you know it from LinkedIn, where obviously you have the social networks. But maybe why did you invest in that? How did you source it? What's the story behind it? I'll give the floor to you.
For sure. Yeah, I think I'll start with some high level trends in the database world, and then dive into graph database, and then what we're excited about dgraph. I think what we're seeing in the database world is these kind of old school tools, for lack of a better word, are being broken up into a bunch of different pieces and a bunch of specialized systems. So you see Timescale popping up as a Timescale database. You see Elastic popping up. You see Kafka for stream processing. And so it's really becoming a much more fragmented world in the data landscape. And we think there's a big opportunity for graph databases to become more important in that world. And you talked about kind of the background at my background at LinkedIn. And one of the things we saw there was LinkedIn had all of these entities, right? People, companies, jobs. The most important thing was not just looking at people, just looking at jobs. It was how the people related to the jobs, related to the companies, and all of those relationships looked like. And that was where all of the value was. And so we really see relationships as data becomes more complex, as the thing that people, the questions that people want to ask of data become more complex, the relationships will become a first-class citizen, and that will make storing data in a graph database much more important than it has been in the past. And so that's why we're really excited about graph databases as a vertical. And I think you see that across almost every tech company that has reached a certain level of data sophistication, built their own kind of graph database. And the goal with dgraph is to bring that capability, not just from the top tech companies, but really to everyone who might need a graph database.
Yeah, so Redpoint led the, I think it was 11.5 million Series A with the participation of the previous seed round investors. Maybe in this particular instance, how did you think about dgraph compared to the other large open source graph databases, in particular Neo4j?
Sure. So our thesis behind the investment in dgraph in particular, there are really three main things. I think we were really excited about the team. Manish Jain, the CEO and founder of dgraph, he is one of those really rare founders that is an unbelievable engineer, an amazing architect, but also has great product vision and great people skills as well. And so when we met him, we were immediately excited about the opportunity to potentially work with him. And he also has deep expertise in the graph database world and has assembled a great team of distributed systems engineers to go after this problem. So we were really excited about working with them. I think that was the first thing. The second thing is the technology, and this is moving more towards differentiation from other players in the market. Dgraph is distributed, and we're big believers in distributed databases. We've invested in which they're distributed people database. We think that data volumes are only going to increase, and having a distributed database that can scale to any of the needs of companies is really important. So that was something about the technology that got us really excited. The second thing is they had amazing open source traction. When we went and looked at it, I think we came across a post with the title "Shut Up and Take My Money," and it was a user that was looking for an enterprise offering. And I think that's the kind of product pull that you want to see from the community when making an investment. So I think really strong open source traction there. The last thing that differentiates it from some of the other players is it's built with really modern technologies in mind. So it's built with GraphQL from the beginning, built in Go. So it really fits with the other systems that engineers are using today, kind of like their back-end puzzle. And so we really like that. We like investing behind the trends of GraphQL and Go. And so that's we became excited about that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely get it. I'm personally a big fan of GraphQL. And when I read through your investment announcement, that's something that really has struck a chord with me, I would say. So maybe segueing more to the next frontier, what is the rest of the year going to look like for you in terms of what kind of deals are you looking at?
Yeah, for sure. I think we were talking about open source at the application layer. So for the rest of the year, one of the things that we're doing is going through different verticals, as I was mentioning. Some of the verticals we're excited about, one is security and identity. So thinking about if it would make sense to have an open source password manager, like an open source Dashlane or an open source Okta. I think there's a bunch of compelling reasons why you might want to do that. You get the advantage of transparency, so you know exactly how your data is being stored. You can store it on your own infrastructure, and so you really get that control. I think that's something that users are going to care about in the security and identity world. So that's one we're spending some time there. Another area that I'm really excited about is open source workflow tools. So there's a bunch of new tools that are popping up in this area, and we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out who to track there and which players are most relevant. I think any time you have software that is connecting a bunch of things, there's an opportunity for open source, and workflows like Zapier, things like that, are kind of the ultimate connectors. Mm-hmm. And we think there could be an advantage to enterprises wanting to host that themselves, so they can connect all of these different systems and build workflows from one on-prem service to another one or to the cloud without having to send all of their intermediate data to the cloud. And so that's another vertical that we're spending some time looking at.
And in terms of the regional focus, which is typically San Francisco and Bay Area, are you also looking just at like traction on GitHub, basically saying, well, even if this company isn't in the Bay yet, we're still looking at it? What's your thinking a little bit around that?
Yeah. So we have historically spent more time in the United States, but I think one thing that's really cool about open source is it can highlight projects from all over the world. We do use GitHub as a way of sourcing those projects, so looking at engagement there, engagement in the community forums, engagement on Reddit and things like that. And I think it's a good way to track projects. And I think it's really cool that someone can build something halfway around the world, and then, you know, we can go find them and potentially have the opportunity of working together. And I think that's a really cool thing. And it's one thing that makes me really excited to come into work, because you never know what you might uncover or a new open source project that could pop up. And we're always looking for those.
Yeah, I love that. But then when it comes to scaling, maybe just let me ask this as a last point there. Oftentimes when you get to the scaling stage, investors are a little bit hesitant to allow remote work, even for commercial open source projects. What's your stance on that? And I've talked to Gremlin recently, and I think they're 50% remote, but they're still mostly in the Bay. Is your thinking around it that like core of the founding team should be in the Bay, or what's the thinking around that?
We encourage companies to do whatever they think is best for their startup and their company. And I think in a lot of cases that is remote work. So we're, like you mentioned, we're investors in Gremlin. We're also investors in HashiCorp that has been distributed since day one. And so we like that model. We think it makes sense, especially given that tech talent can come from all over the world and is really expensive and potentially harder to retain in the Bay Area. So we really like distributed teams, and it's something that we're seeing more and more from our portfolio.
Yeah, I love that. The last point, a call to action. Where can people find out more about you, Patrick? And maybe if you want to plug in an event, a meetup, or exciting things you're attending.
For sure. I will be at the GraphQL conference. That is tomorrow. So maybe past by the time this is airing. Sure. But we'll be there, and DGraph will be there. Follow me on Twitter at Patrick A. Chase, and look out for more posts from us around open source. We're going to try to put out some more content around open source as the application layer and benchmarking for open source companies. So if you're interested, be sure to follow on Twitter. And
amazing. Looking forward to it. So Patrick, thank you so much for being with me here today. I think it's super exciting what you're working on, and I'm looking forward to follow your journey at Redpoint.
Awesome. Erasmus, thank you so much for having me.